Continuing with the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 10, entitled Divisions of the Creation, Text Number 6.
Tapasa idam anena
Vijaya chitma
samstaya Vivriddha vijnana bala Nyapadvayum sahambasa Tapasa yedamanena Vijaya chitma samstaya Vivreda vijnanam balo Nyapadvayum sahambasa Tapasa yedamanena Vijaya chitma samstaya Vivreda vijnana bhado Nyapadvayum sahambasa
Tapasa by penance.
He
certainly.
Idam
anena increasing.
Vijaya
by transcendental knowledge.
Cha
also.
Atma
self.
Sanstaya
situated in the self.
Vivreda
matured.
Vijnana
practical knowledge.
Bhala
power.
Nyapa
drank.
Vayum
the wind.
Sahambasha
along with the water. Translation. Long penance and transcendental knowledge of self-realization had matured Brahma in practical knowledge, and thus he drank the wind completely, along with the water. Purport. Lord Brahma's struggle for existence is a personal example of the continued fight between the living entities in the material world and the illusory energy called Maya. Beginning from Brahma down to this age, the living entities are struggling with the forces of material nature. By advanced control in science and transcendental realization, one can try to control the material energy, which works against our endeavors. And in modern age, advanced material scientific knowledge and penance have played very wonderful roles in controlling the powers of material energy. Such control of the material energy, however, can be most successfully carried out if one is a soul surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and carries out his order in the spirit of loving transcendental service. It is stated tadara jastamo bhava kamalubhadiyas chaye mateiviti tanviti stittam sattva prasidati, that by the process of devotional service, the influence of the modes of material nature, especially the modes of ignorance and passion, disappears, and one becomes situated in visuddha sattva, in transcendental goodness. And therefore, the influence of the modes, of the lower modes of material nature, tend to engage the living entity in many unnecessary complications in his dealings with the material energy. One who is influenced by these lower modes of material nature will do so many things that are totally unnecessary and will have to subsequently face so much suffering. We're seeing that very much in modern life. What modern man is doing to himself, it's inconceivable. What we're doing to the planet. We've discussed a little bit about nuclear energy in the last few days, and we've also been driving quite extensively over Holland and passed a few of these nuclear power plants, and so we became inspired to discuss the nuclear waste, which is just being dumped everywhere. And there's in Germany alone 3,000 illegal dumping sites. That's a lot. That means most of the forest must have some stuff in there, and so forth. So, because what to do with this radioactive waste that stays poisonous for 300,000 years? It is just one example of how modern man is making his own life hell. We are spraying our food with so much poison and then we eat it. And it would be insane if we put spray cans on the table with all the chemicals inside, you know, to just spray it over our nice fresh food. And then we go and happily eat it. We would probably have such people take away in straitjackets. These are examples how we are causing unnecessary complications in our life due to the influence of the lower modes of material nature. In the same way, we get very passionate about the idea of enjoying something. And we're so convinced that, and then we go through so much trouble to get that object, right, of our desired enjoyment, our idea. And then when we get it, we don't enjoy at all. We suffer, right? Like anything. This is, again, the mode of passion. And we do it again and again. Even in old age, we are still trying to do this, right? Life after life. So devotional service can free the living entity from the modes of material nature. And in this way, we become transcendental to these modes of material nature. Now here, Lord Brahma, he is empowered. Lord Brahma is becoming free from the modes of material nature, and it strengthens him in his intelligence. And then along with that, he is also given the special power by which he can drink that wind and along with the water. Right, which is a mystical feat beyond our capacity. Only empowered personalities like Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva can do such extraordinary things like drinking huge quantities of water, etc. Drinking an ocean of poison, catching the Ganges on his head, Lord Brahma, all these kind of things, or Lord Shiva. All these things are beyond our capacity. So, it is not that every devotee is equally powerful, because the Lord has an individual plan with every devotee. Every devotee is an instrument in the hands of the Lord, and the Lord will decide what our role will be. And we are simply leaving it up to him. Like Raghunath Das Goswami said that he would always be inclined to take the lower service, and only when being called for the higher service would he pursue that. So this is indeed an important principle. If we are so eager for the higher position, then it will cause havoc, because that eagerness will be fed by our own material desire, which will entangle us in the modes of passion. And we try to then enjoy our material position. But if we are called for a particular position of responsibility, and if we are given a certain amount of power, then it is a different matter. Then it may be accepted. Still, one must be careful. Even Lord Brahma is sometimes becoming overwhelmed by his extraordinary power. We see, on occasions, he competed with Krishna or was not understanding his position in full, in relation to Krishna. When he came to Dwarka and was stopped by the doorman and asked, "Who are you, Lord Brahma?" Which Lord Brahma? At that point, we understand that Lord Brahma was bewildered and did not understand that he was just an insignificant instrument of the Lord who had now been given this position of Brahma, right? Which is something like the temple president of the universe, right? It's a post, in other words. It's not really a, it's not really I am that, right? It is simply a post. So, the point is that we are not necessarily so powerful. So devotional service may not give us the power to deal with the material energy. It may not. In spite of being surrendered to Krishna, in spite of having taken up the process of devotional service, the modes of material nature may still be too powerful. And they may still upset our whole life to the point that everything goes topsy-turvy and there may be nothing we can do about it. Right. The Supreme Lord protects the devotee, but not necessarily his body. Right. Not necessarily. Right. There is no such thing. On one of my previous visits to South Africa, one devotee, one Mataji, she had been murdered, and it was a great shock because she was a very nice devotee. She was a very surrendered soul and very kind, and one of the leading devotees in a particular Namahatta, which had 300 members, and she was like the mother of the Namahatta. So, you know, everyone was like blown out. The painter, the house painter, had come off his ladder and had cut her throat, right? So what to do? And everyone was very shocked that a devotee could die in such a way, right? And of course, when we hear such things, we understand that Krishna does not protect the body necessarily. He may. You know, so many times we have been saved, right? A miracle, right? Another car accident, near car accident, right? Or another rolling of a car and not a scratch, right? So many occasions, right? I went down the hill here in Radhadesh in the winter. There was ice on the hill and the car was just going straight down and there was nothing could be done. And I just missed whatever traffic was there. I just sailed right in between the cars and went across the road to the other side. So, I don't know. So Krishna, we see Krishna in such moments. We see Krishna saved us. Krishna saved us. Yes. And what if we die? Krishna still saved us. But this time he didn't save the body, he just saved the soul. There is no doubt that Krishna always saves us, in any condition. But he decides how he will save us. So there's no guarantee that Krishna will save the body. There is, of course we understood that this devotee who died in that way went through so much intense suffering at the end of her life that we could also understand that actually so much karma was burned up, and that therefore actually she, by that intense suffering at the end, she became eligible for a much better destination, without a doubt. Right? So actually, from our material perspectives, terrible, so horrible. But actually, taking it from a purely spiritual platform, not at all inauspicious, actually. Like that, a transcendental vision is very different from the mundane understanding. And in a transcendental vision, one must accept whatever Krishna gives us. So if Krishna gives us the power to deal with the material energy, then it must be his intention that we deal with the material energy. And then it is our duty to use whatever ability Krishna gives us to try and be victorious. So if Krishna gives us the powers which look suitable for fighting with the modes of material nature, then we are meant to fight on his behalf and try to bring them under control. But if the modes of material nature are totally overpowering, right? The plane, right, is going straight down, right? It is going straight down towards the ground, and the speed is accelerating from 1,000 to 2,000 and going towards 3,000 kilometers an hour. It is not the moment to try and practice the power of levitation, right? And try and levitate the plane by mystic power and pray to Krishna for being empowered. It is the time to accept now the circumstances are beyond us. Maybe I should just take shelter of the Lord and leave it up to him. So this is the consideration. When we are not able to deal with the circumstances ourselves, then we turn to Krishna and say, all right, we throw our hands up in the air like Draupadi and say, okay, Govinda, you know, it's up to you. Right? But this is not to be done as long as it appears that we do have the power to deal with the material nature. Then we are meant to deal with the material nature. So in this way, the devotee is sometimes aloof from the material circumstances and sometimes acts in a very attached way, right, in the material circumstances. Not attached for himself, but attached for Krishna. And when something happens within his jurisdiction of power, then he must try with all his might, with all his energy, and no less. Right? This is the fine line. And therefore, one has to use his intelligence in Krishna consciousness. It is important that one has to judge every situation according to the circumstances. There is no easy standard program, right, where we have to just one policy, right? Depend on Krishna, you know, throw your hands up in the air. No. At times we throw our hands up in the air, and at other times we must endeavor to the maximum of our ability. This is an essential principle, but always remembering that the results depend on Krishna, no matter what. Even if we have all the talents, all the power, and normally we should have been able to control that material energy because we did it hundreds of times before, there is no guarantee that it will work. And when it doesn't work, then we know it's Krishna. And sometimes it is like that, that a very difficult thing is achieved just like that, in no time. And you're just amazed, right? Wow, you know, that was easy. Right? And you really thought that like it was going to be an impossible task, and you tried, and it was immediately successful. And other times, the easiest thing becomes impossible, and for like, we struggle and just can't get it done, although normally we can easily do such things again and again, and it always works, and now it just doesn't want to work. Right. So, in this way, we also see Krishna here. But the modes of material nature are like that, right? It's not that it's always the interference of Krishna and that Krishna is trying to tell us something. Sometimes it's just the modes of material nature. Suddenly, the modes of material nature make something we can do 100 times successfully impossible to execute. That can happen. So in this material world, it remains unpredictable at all times. We cannot rely on our powers. And when such an occasion occurs that something that is so easy to do suddenly becomes difficult, it is a good reminder to us that actually I'm not in control. I thought that I was so much in control, but really I'm not. So in this way, the modes of material nature have always built within a natural lesson. All along, the Lord is teaching. It is the Lord who's teaching us to this arrangement of the three modes of material nature. And even as devotees, we are going through this teaching. We may be transcendental, but our residence is not. Right? We may be transcendental, but our body is not. Our body is totally material and is going through the onslaughts of the three modes of material nature. Right? And sometimes it functions and sometimes it doesn't, and so forth. So all these experiences of sometimes being empowered and sometimes being disempowered is there simply to bring us to the point of dependence on Krishna. The whole purpose of existence is dependence on Krishna. There is no other purpose. Right? To realize that we totally depend on Krishna. But not just dependence on Krishna, because that is Santa Ras. If one is only aware of his dependence on Krishna, but is not taking any action himself, that's not good enough. That is the lowest of all relationships of Krishna. Because we must endeavor. We must endeavor for Krishna. And a devotee, he endeavors for Krishna. And by his desire, he becomes empowered. This is the nature of desire. When we desire to serve Krishna, then that desire is empowering us, because Krishna will reciprocate with that desire and will give us, if we sincerely desire and try to and are ready to take any austerity to fill a desire, then sooner or later Krishna will empower us to fulfill this task. And in this way, the motto that Srila Prabhupada taught us, impossible is the word in a fool's dictionary. In this way, there is no limit to what a Vaishnava can achieve. There is no limit, ultimately. It is a matter of desire. Now, it is not only our personal desire, but more even than our desire is the desire of the spiritual master. If we dedicate everything to fulfilling the desire of the spiritual master, then Krishna becomes double pleased. Right? He becomes pleased with our endeavor, and he becomes pleased that we have surrendered to the desire of the spiritual master. And therefore he will empower us even more. We are seeing that the pure devotees, the Nitya Siddha devotees in the spiritual sky, it is described, they're even empowered more than any living being in this world. It is said that Lord Brahma has 48 of the 64 qualities of Krishna, and that he doesn't have them in full, but still all these 48 qualities manifest in him. Whereas in a living entity, that is the maximum he can attain within this material world. Most of us don't have the 48 qualities of Krishna manifest in us. Many are non-manifest. We may have much less qualities manifest. But we have the potential to manifest these 48 qualities of Krishna to some extent. Not fully, but to some extent. That's the maximum of our potential. But it says that the Nitya Siddha devotees in the spiritual world, along with Lord Shiva, have 55 of the 64 qualities of Krishna. Right? So they are even more empowered than Lord Brahma. Right? So this is the nature. As we surrender to Krishna, one becomes more and more empowered. We see that the residents in the spiritual world, they are very much empowered. Their bodies are extraordinarily beautiful. It always happens that when you give a lecture, that things come back from the conversations you've had with people. It just sort of leaves remnants in the subconsciousness. So we were talking about an Australian play called The Demigods That Fell From Heaven. And the play basically was the story of a demigod who was traveling by his vina, by his mystic vina through the universe, and then in the process a string broke and he landed on the bed of Spike and Snitch, who were two punks, you know, one very tall and the other very, very short. And, well, you know, just in their room, and Spike and Snitch were like, you know, their favorite pastime was intoxication and harassing people while they, and making fun of people. So they had just, put drugs in the tea of the ladies' club in that particular area, and to see how the ladies would respond. And they were enjoying that, and they were doing all kinds of things, wild things. So when this demigod landed on the bed, right, they thought, let's make some fun with this guy. And but it didn't quite work out, because he had some powers, some mystic powers, and, you know. So at one point they brought out a gun trying to control him, but he also was able to control that easily. So then they decided that if you can't fight them, join them, right? So they decided, let's make friends, right? And they tried to make friends. So they said, like, well, you know, Let's not waste our time with fighting now. He said, let's not waste the time to the demigod. And they said, like, you know, let's just be together and enjoy. Right? The demigod said, now you're talking. Now you're talking, right? Now it gets like, you know, I was waiting for this all the time, you know. I was wondering when it was going to happen. And so Spike Smith said, yes, we have this very nice drink, you know, like really the best, you know, the best of the best. The demigod said, bring it, right? What are we waiting for? Let's go. And they brought their best whiskey, and he, of course, didn't like it very much. And they were quite upset, you know, that he was, they were offended, you know. But then he gave Soma Ra, so, okay, they admitted that it was better. Anyway, and then they were also talking about bringing some girls, you know. Demigod was also into that. And then this girl came on, a punk girl, you know, like Lola, you know, with one of these artificial boas around, you know, like floating into the room with background music, etc. And Spike and Snitch were like, you know, like two dogs with their tongue on their toes, and but the demigods was getting the inclination to vomit, right? He was like shocked, you know, at the horror. He was shocked at the horror and said, take it away, please. Because the standard of life on the heavenly planets is much higher than the standard of life on this planet. And the beauty of the ladies on the heavenly planets by far exceeds the beauty of the ugly creatures on this planet. Yeah? Which is, of course, not only for the ladies, also for the men. Yeah? So it is described, however, that the beautiful heavenly damsels, right, are just appearing bleak and dull compared to those residents of Vaikuntha, right, whose bodily beauty is really extraordinary. And men and women are so extraordinarily, inconceivably beautiful. My Prabhupada said, but no sex. Because everyone is so absorbed in service to Krishna. So much so, right, that they just don't think of that.
The thought is not even in the forefront of their mind. And the beauty is not distracting their minds at all. So we're seeing that in the spiritual world, the living beings are so extraordinarily empowered, so much empowered. It is inconceivable to have kalpa vrikshas, to have surabhi cows, et kamadenus, that can supply, and anything one wants to offer to Krishna, one can have it immediately, unlimited facility. It can all be supplied without any obstruction. Therefore, one can realize the maximum of one's idea. Whereas here, it is always such a struggle, right? And we can only an ordinary human being can only realize a percentage of his dream. Whereas Yudhisthira Maharaj, it is said, he was specially blessed because he could fulfill all his desires. All his desires, he had all his desires to serve Krishna, the Rajasuya sacrifice, and he was able to fully execute it. So he was a very rare spirit soul in this material realm. Ordinarily, that's not the case. So, Lord Brahma is very much empowered, and for that reason, he can drink wind and he can drink water when it is a disturbance. But in our case, we have to mostly tolerate. We can't do anything about it. We are so weak in this age of Kali that tolerance is what we have to develop. We just have to tolerate. But this is the glory, to simply tolerate the onslaughts of material existence, somehow or other. And if we do so, then we become glorious, because we become recognized by Krishna. No sacrifice goes in vain. Krishna will notice that we are with so little capacity, so little ability, that we are tolerating all this anxiety, all this trouble, all this difficulty. And so this is one level of Krishna consciousness, tolerance, when one doesn't have the power to deal with the material energy. A still higher level of Krishna consciousness is so much absorption in Krishna consciousness and in service to Krishna that one's mind cannot even think of the difficulties of material life. That is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, in that story of the man who tried to make the perfect arrow and who was concentrating so much. And that day there was a parade in the city, and the emperor of that country came through the city with the whole band and everything that emperors have, the entire entourage, and everyone was talking about it. And it had gone right through the street of the arrow maker. And people were saying, wow, that was really amazing. The arrow maker said, what was amazing? He said, well, that whole parade. Parade? What parade? The emperor. Emperor? Yeah. He came through the street. Didn't you notice? No. I didn't see anything. No. Totally absorbed. So it is mentioned that one should be so absorbed in devotional service. Maya? Maya? Where? Right? I haven't seen Maya. Where is Maya? I don't see Maya. Right? Maya. Suffering? Huh? You know? What? Your body? Huh? Oh, I have a body. Right? Kind of like mood, right? Totally transcendental to material existence. So that's another level. That's still one step up. Yeah. So there may be different levels on which a Vaishnava relates to the material energy, depending on his level of advancement. But if we simply tolerate If we are just on the level of tolerating the onslaughts of the material energy, either coming from without or coming from within, we are eligible to receive the mercy of Krishna. From without means all the troubles of life, and from within means vācha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jīva vegam, udra pasta vegam, etan vegam, yuvisaheta dhīra, to deal with the vegas, to deal with the pushings of the senses from within, and to ignore them. Right. Then one is eligible to return to the spiritual world. Right. So, yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. If one tolerates, one becomes eligible to get the mercy of the Lord. And the mercy of the Lord, in the last few days, of course, we have been meditating on the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And we've been discussing that a bit. And it was mentioned that how can one know that one got the mercy of Lord Nityananda? How? That one's material desires are decreasing. Then one knows that one really got the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Yes, so in this way, if we simply engage in devotional service, and always trying to tolerate, then we will get the mercy of Lord Nityananda, and the material desires will disappear without a doubt. Because devotional service drives out the material desires. Srinvada svakata Krishna punya sravana kirtana ridhya. It is purifying the heart. There's no doubt about it. Anatapasanam saksat bhakti yoga madoksaji. It takes out all the anarthas from the heart. So in this way, that is the real power of a devotee. That he is unaffected by maya. Either by the means of tolerance, or either by the means of being so absorbed in Krishna that he doesn't even see maya anymore. One or the other. Any questions or comments?
Yesterday you were saying that the temple should be like a loving place.
A loving place? I said that.
A loving atmosphere in the temples. And I read in the teachings of Lord Kapila Dev that the men and women in Krishna conscious movement should relate like brothers and sisters. And you were also saying today in the Vaikuntha planets that men and women have a transcendental relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in this constant life, it seems like there's the relationship between the men and women vary in different extremes of attraction and repulsion.
Okay.
So what would be the transcendental way of everyone loving one another?
Well, I think that one has to recognize that the majority of the devotees in our movement are in the conditioned state of devotional service. And when we are in that conditioned state, then we are acting upon the platform of Vaidhi Bhakti, or prescribed duty. And Vaidhi Bhakti gives many regulations of how to deal with the opposite sex in a restricted way. It says only association for important business and things like that. The butter and fire verse. Right. Yanuvakni pramada. Griyata kumbha sama puman. So that's there. But then one can take these principles of which are outlined in Vaidhi Bhakti when one is conditioned. It means one is conditioned by the modes of material nature. And one can therefore take these principles according to the mode one is in. So when one is in the lower modes, right, of ignorance and passion, then the tendency is to apply such principles in the wrong way. Right? And then one takes an instruction of the scripture and uses it to make life impossible. Right? And we have done that, right? If one is conditioned by the modes of material nature, then one can use scriptures for all kinds of things. I have been in disagreements where the scriptures were quoted left and right, you know, like daggers, you know, in an argument, right? Like mantras were being thrown, verses were being thrown. It says in the Bhagavad Gita, oh yeah, well, wait a minute, Srimad Bhagavatam, you know. And the verses were like, were flying through the air, right, in the argument. I don't know if they were originally intended for that purpose. We can witness, right, in our movement that in the relationship between men and women, restrictions have been imposed, you know, coming forth out of this Vaidhi Bhakti concept of the relationship, with a rigidity, right, and a coldness and a harshness, right, that has hurt many devotees. And that sometimes have even discouraged devotees to the point of leaving, etc. So this is very unfortunate. The concept of the restrictions of restricted dealings between men and women, which exist in Vaidhi Bhakti, is certainly to be upheld, but in a respectful way, right? Especially the form of woman, right? It is said that Srimati Radharani is Madan Mohan Mohini. She has the power to attract he who has the power to attract Cupid. So Krishna has the power to attract even Cupid, and then Srimati Radharani has even the power to attract Krishna. Therefore, it is said that the attractive power of Srimati Radharani is even greater than that of Krishna. And it says that the form of man is a reflection of Krishna's body, and the form of the female form a reflection of Srimati Radharani's body. Therefore, the power of the female form is even greater. Whereas, you know, if men sit and blink the eyes, you know, no one really goes like, wow, what lovely blinking, right? But if she blinks, you know, everyone goes, God, I love the way she blinks, I love the way she winks, you know. It becomes, poetry is written about it, right? It's like, that's just the way it is, you know. I will not do it today, but sometimes I do a demonstration of showing the leg, and if I reveal my leg, right, no one has really, like, you know, lost self-control over my leg, you know. Maybe in laughing and rolling over the ground, right, but certainly nothing more, right, because that's my leg, you know. It's not exactly a lust object, you know. But a lady has that particular power in Shakti. Right? So, therefore, especially the women have been singled out as the lust object, right? You know, and like as some, and have been treated like that, you know, lust of Maya personified, lust object, you know, lock them up, you know, in a cupboard, right, bar them out, you know, quiet, don't even chant loudly when a man is nearby, you know, Manaka, you know, are you trying to make the brahmacharis fall down by chanting here, you know, why are you coming through this door, you know, why don't you use the underground tunnel, you know. So we have had this mood, you know, in the past. So this is a bit over the top, right? It has to. It's like because the Western society is so much in the mode of passion, right? We were so much in the mode of passion. Enjoy, go, control, go to the material world, do it quick, instant, enjoyment, now, and now we turn around to spiritual life, and now we are going like 180, 280 kilometers an hour towards Krishna, you know, quick, you know, like. So we have the same passion in our movement, right? In different flavors. So where's the Indian culture? Is such a human culture. Indian People are so human in their dealings with each other, right? In all respects, you know. India is one big family. Everybody is together. Everyone is kind of accommodating each other. Everyone is, you know, an Indian train, someone comes, sits down on your berth, he has no reservation. What would you do in the West? Call the cops. Right? Get this man thrown off the train. He has no reservation. You know, in India, it's like, why do you have no reservation? Sitting on my seat. Anyway. What can I do? I mean, you know, what's that like? Why don't you go sit somewhere else? I says, there's nowhere else to go. Anyway, you know, okay. We'll work it out. You know. So, okay, you can have a corner. You know. You give them a corner. Right? You give people a corner. But we have in ISKCON for some times not even given the ladies a corner. No corner. Yeah. They can join, but they cannot have a corner. So then there was like a bit of a liberation movement. You know? And sometimes, with all due respect, I think we should keep in mind the Vedic culture. I think the Vedic culture is the model for good social living. I don't think we have to reinvent the wheel. Right? Rather, I think we should look at traditional India, not at modernized, but at traditional India, where Vedic culture is preserved and where the relationships between men and women are just perfectly worked out. It is a fact that in India, the ladies, right, generally speaking, traditionally speaking, are not like doing big public shows of kirtan in front of men, but on their own, amongst themselves, they have huge kirtans. Big Mataji kirtans you have, you know, like these Rajasthani ladies in the villages, you know, sometimes they have these huge kirtans, play a mean mardanga too, everything. But not like, you know, on one side the man, the other side the ladies, and you know, like Mataji just go. It's. What can we say, you know? Then that Shakti goes in. That Shakti that's also in the eyebrows and in the winks and the blinks, it goes in. Same Shakti, right? What can we do? So, that has to be considered. And all, you know, we cannot just... So in loving dealings, we have to be a little careful. Otherwise, it translates into lusty dealings, unfortunately. So not in the name of lust, but loving dealings open up all the doors to lusty dealings. That's the problem. It is difficult. Man and woman in the material world is always a little difficult together. Little. You have to be on guard. It's just how it is. I mean, it's like it's not nasty, but it's just how it is. It's like, you know, if you're not on guard, then something can happen. And then it doesn't stay with one. A whole chain reaction follows to that one action. And at the end, it's a big chain on your leg. A big, big chain called Maitunya Agara, the chain of sex love. And you're caught up like anything. Birth and death goes on and on and on. So, any other question? Come, Mataji.
Like, wouldn't it be like the main greed be like just basic respect?
You go so quick, I couldn't catch the first word.
The main greed is just like some respect.
Yeah.
And usually it means a respectful distance.
Yeah, and with respect also. Respect is not just, pronouns, you know, but respect also means giving some room to live. Yeah? Giving some respect also means, you know, giving a, okay, then you can have a little air too, you know. Are we going to give air to the Matajis, you know? Yeah, they should give some air, some prasadam, some space, and all these things. It's okay. You can have. Not too much. Because then they become puffed up, you know. Everything must be balanced, no? Everything must be balanced.
I mean, respect is something that I think respect, what I understand is that we understand that Krishna is giving it to all of us.
Krishna is giving it to all of us. Respect.
Yeah, it's not that like anybody's giving anybody anything, but it's not like the men are giving the ladies air or the men are giving the ladies anything, but
Krishna gives it to us.
All of us. And if we respect that the ladies are, and we respect also that the men are endeavoring for Krishna consciousness, so that's why it's our duty to be chaste, because it's disrespectful to not be chaste. And it's disrespectful for them to think that we don't deserve the same amount of facility to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, as long as we don't forget, you know, that the female birth has that particular austerity of dealing with this Shakti, you know, you have the Shakti, right? I mean, if the ladies don't cover their head, they have the Shakti, right? It's like that. If the ladies are, you know, laughing out loud in the presence of men, right? That laugh, right, that sound has so much power that it can just whoosh, do the Mohini Murti effect, you know? Huh? Ladies have that Shakti, and sometimes they may not be aware of it, you know, but it's effect. It's amazing how strong that power is. And that's something, that's. Therefore, Vedic culture doesn't have total equality. Right? It deals with it. It really, you know, in society, makes sure that Shakti cannot kind of break loose. And we should also, in our movement, watch out for that. Because we have too many loose relationships. So the Shakti is too loose. You know, we let the Shakti loose too much because we have so many loose relationships in our movement that shouldn't be there, actually. Not auspicious. So there is a problem, and we have to deal with that and have to see how this Shakti can be nicely, you know, not crushed, but nicely dealt with. And I think that's what we see in the Vedic culture and in India. In traditional India, I'm talking, not modern India. And maybe in India there was also too much oppression at one stage. I don't want to idealize India also, but still I think that we should look at India if we look at social solutions. Yeah, I'm a liberal person. I'm for everything, you know, freedom, live, let live. Everybody can have everything, but you know, what about this problem with this Shakti? It is a real problem. Can make the difference of
culture.
Huh? Yeah. Any other question or comment? No. Thanks. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.